Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Put him right in.
You put him right out there. So, like, what are you banking on? The idea that Tyler Shuck isn't ready? Guess what? If Shuck isn't ready by week one, he's never going to be ready.
Maybe he gets injured.
He was injured a lot in college.
Similar to the way we view Joe Flacco, maybe you just need somebody to start the first 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay, but if that was the case, why would you give up assets to have someone start the 6 to 8 weeks? Like, if Shuck goes down, or if Shuck can't play at all, aren't you entering yourself back into the draft for quarterback of 2026? Don't you want to lose as many games as possible at that point?
I don't know, teams always think that way. I don't know Kellen Moore in his first season's thinking that way.
Okay, that's a great point, because Kellen Moore would be the wild card in this scenario, because you can go 1 year and be fired and be done.
Yeah. Well, and it's...
He also is a perceived to be quarterback whisperer himself.
Yeah.
So he would have value in the idea that I can make this guy great.
And, I mean, their other quarterbacks are Spencer Rattler and Jake Haener.
Yeah, and Rattler, none of that's going to work.
Yeah. Well, it's not a good plan. I don't know. The Browns' plan is
well, but he had success with Kenny Pickett, though.
You're right, technically. Though every time somebody's like, okay, so the tie that binds you here, it's not Joe Flacco.
No, and that's where I think people get this wrong.
Yes, and in fairness, I'm much more happy to trade Kenny Pickett for a markup, like some sort of transfer fee of like, well, we got him for DTR and a fifth rounder, but you can have him for like a compensatory third rounder.
Mm-hmm.
I'm much more happy for that than, hey, we just got a fifth rounder for Joe Flacco.
Yeah, in my estimation on this, I think Pickett would be the play because of that connection. It would not be about Joe Flacco. But I find it interesting that everyone is now connected to the Browns and the Saints, and we're not going to have this answer for months on end.
So I think the reason why it's more likely to be Flacco is, I think if Kevin Stefanski's honest, I don't think Kevin really ever wanted Joe Flacco back. If a year ago...
Oh, no. I meant for the Saints. I want to make that clear. For the Saints, Pickett more than Flacco. I agree with the idea that people believe that Stefanski and company would want Pickett to start at some point this year.
Like, if you look at just the general skill set, and you and I have had this conversation about limitations, I think Kevin feels more comfortable with a quarterback with more limitations, because they're more likely to go out there and just run his offense. And I think that is, by the way, that's a Shanahan thing too. Like, I think that's why Brock Purdy fits what he wants to do. Brock Purdy can do like two things, but they fit within that offense. So go do those two things and don't deviate from it. And I kind of feel the same way about Kevin. I think he likes his quarterbacks to be a little bit more on the limited side physically, because then they have to lock into his offense.
Yeah, you can't go 80 miles per hour on the highway if your car only goes 65, Nick.
Yes. And so I guess this would make it like a Ford Tempo and like a 19-something.
So it's closer to like a dune buggy than anything at this point.
But no, I look at it and think to myself, you don't want to do what like the Panthers did with Baker 3 or 4 years ago, where you trade for the guy in July. Because are you really setting that quarterback up to succeed if you don't trade for him until right before the season? But I guarantee you, unless the Saints sign somebody out there like a Carson Wentz, the longer it's just Tyler Shuck, Spencer Rattler, and Jake Haener, the more likely it is, I think, they come by and at least call about one of the two veteran quarterbacks.
I mean, I'm going to be surprised if it's not just Tyler Shuck starting week one and that's just what they're doing. I mean, that's what, if you're Kellen Moore, that's everything you want and then some, because you want to be able to show this young kid, he's not young, he's 26, but you want to be able to show the rookie quarterback not only how to do it, but throw him in the fire right away and then see if you need a quarterback for the following year.
So it's interesting. I do think that there's a yes or no question that most teams actually do try and sincerely answer before they throw a kid out there, which is he playable? And I just don't know that Tyler, I know that he has played enough football to be, and is old enough to be considered playable. That doesn't mean he's NFL ready.
I don't know. I just keep going back to all the draft evaluations. And one of the things they did kept saying is that his arm was better than Cam Ward's right now. His skill set was better than Cam Ward's right now. It's just at 26 years old, you just got nowhere to go with it.
And
like you've already done it, and there's nothing gradually that's going to get better. Whereas Cam Ward obviously can only go higher.
Oh, I don't think it's so. I think it's just the speed of the game. Like, I do think that there are certain guys, like the physical tools, sure, you can't necessarily get better physically because you're a grown-ass man. He's got a 401k and a family. But I mean, even like with Shador, Dillon Gabriel, it's why we're having the conversation about both guys played a butt ton of college football. It's the idea of you might be better served week 9 starting than week 1. But to what you're saying, I do think if you're Kellen Moore trying to make a splash in the NFL and make a name as a head coach, Kenny Pickett and or Tyler Shuck are your Sam Darnold or your look at the quarterback I found, the Jalen Hurts,
yeah,
a hell of a lot more than if you just go out there and get Carson Wentz at 32, or certainly if they were to try and trade for Joe Flacco.
It's interesting in a weird way, Kellen Moore and Kevin Stefanski have a lot in common in that respect, where they both, you get the credit for the Kenny Picketts of the world, and you're trying to avoid, if you can, throwing the Joe Flaccos of the world out there, because you just get no credit in that regard.
Which is wild, because Kevin did, but it's just different, right? I like, well, it's the end of a season. It's this, that. Nobody picks apart. Like, people still give him more credit, specific to Kevin, for Jacoby Brissett, who statistically was the same quarterback in Cleveland that he was in Indy.
I know, but he had that. We've talked about this before. He had the offense. At one point, they were fifth in the NFL as far as yards and scoring. Like, they at least he was able to put points on the board, and that was no one expected that with Jacoby.
I feel like this might be a broken record take by me, but I really hope somebody offers something for Kenny Pickett, because I can face a world where we play Joe Flacco for 8 weeks and go 1-7. I can face a world in which we play the young guys from the rip, even if you juggle the two of them throughout 18 weeks and one gets 9 games, the other gets 8, and you go 1-16. I can face that world. Going 1-16 or going 1-7 to start the season with Kenny Pickett, and I'm going to have to be the guy screaming, "I told you so" on that one. Like, I can't, like, even with Sam Darnold, like, you know, avowed Sam Darnold doubter, yeah. Nick Wilson.
Yeah.
And finally last year I was proven wrong. It's the opposite of
well, that's our wait long enough and your sports take will become right or wrong.
Yes. And so I
basically 90% of sports take, you just wait long enough, it'll be right or wrong eventually.
But when you look at the Sam Darnold thing, I never doubted the physical traits. So with Kenny, he doesn't have great physical traits and he doesn't have great mental traits. So what am I falling back on?
Well, again, you don't have to fall back on anything. I think the Browns are falling back on what happened with the Eagles last year, which was such a tiny, tiny... It's one game. It's one game, but obviously...
Tinier than his hands?
Yeah, even tinier. Okay. Even tinier. It's somehow that's possible. It's possible. I can't get the image of him wearing the two gloves at practice and it was hot outside, Nick.
Yeah, it's very Michael Jackson.
It's hot outside. He's got two gloves on. I just say wild to me.
You don't need a glove on to grab it, I always say.
But like, so we know the Browns and the Eagles are very close, right? We know that, and we know that Andrew Berry and Howie Roseman and the connection they have. You got a lot of bad intel from people you trust if Kenny Pickett really does stink and has nowhere to go from here.
But this is where I'm torn. I think Kevin is really. I don't think it's Glaze, as the kids say. I think he's genuinely excited to see what he can do with Kenny Pickett.
Glaze,
and which means it means like it's like over the top praise. So it's fake.
I
just wanted to make sure.
I had to think about it for a second. That's not one we typically use yet at this point.
The only thing I like glazed are my donuts. Oh,
that's all I could think about. It actually made me hungry.
I kind of could go for like a really good like devil's food cake.
Glazed. When you said glaze, I thought Krispy Kreme immediately.
Yeah,
that's the glazed donut place, obviously.
The late 90s were really the peak for
it
them.
It was so
that
good.
Was a good time.
Why? Has there ever been a food, though, that after you had to eat it hot? If it wasn't hot, it wasn't the same. I know that's with some foods, but within, you had like a 10-minute window, or it was just gone.
Just a 10-minute window?
That was really about it.
216-474-0092. Are the Saints in play for one of the Browns quarterbacks? Cynthia Freeland, NFL Network analyst. We'll ask her about her weekend. We'll also ask her about the strength of schedule, how much it matters to the Cleveland Browns in 5 minutes on 92.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're the fan. Big week for the Gardos as well. Got to get into that as well. But right now, we head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. You know her work from NFL Network. She is a tremendous football analyst. She's good at math, too, which I clearly have no concept of. I couldn't find out 0.1% of $5 billion last week, and that was... So maybe she can help us with that.
Yeah, what's in buying part of the Browns really threw us for a loop there. We forgot the times 100 part of calculating percentages.
And I love that you said it was us, because it was most certainly me. Thank you for tying yourself and syncing with me.
None of us was great there.
Yeah. Cynthia Freeland joins us now. Cynthia, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. How are you guys?
Good. How was your weekend?
It was great. I appreciate the... I would have loved to join you guys on Friday, but... I would have been joining you from a vineyard because I was on my bachelorette party.
Look at that. That is awesome.
Maybe I don't do so much, you know, the math and the football isn't as clear to understand when you're on a vineyard, you know, just a thing.
Because you opened Pandora's box. Now,
yes, of course.
Was this a one-day bachelorette or is this a week? Is it like the movie Sideways where it seemed like to go on for like 2 weeks? What are we talking here?
We did like Friday to Sunday. You know, I'm very fortunate that my friends they took good care of me. So very fortunate for that.
Are you still hungover?
No, I'm good. Not.
That's good. That is good.
It was so nice. The weather was great. Like I wanted to be outside, went to the pool. You know, we made a, I didn't want to not remember it.
How far was the trip from where you're currently at? Because I had this with my bachelor party too, is that you feel like it's such a big ask when it's all said and done. You're just asking so much of everyone.
You know, so I went to business school and I went with my business school friends. So four of the seven all live in San Francisco. So it wasn't too far for the majority. And then two of us are down in Southern California and it's just a quick flight up there. So all things considered, it wasn't so bad. Not so bad compared to some of the ones I've been on where you've had to go like international.
Yeah.
You're like, man, sheesh.
Okay, that's nice of you. Okay, that was respectful. That was very nice, because I feel like sometimes people, they ask the world of it, and you're like, listen, I get it. I know you came to all my stuff, but like this is tough now.
Yeah, for sure. It's, you know, it's, I don't like to, listen, I'm like a Midwesterner. We don't like to like take up too much space, you know, we're nice. I appreciate my niceness, but my friends were so great.
Yeah, I think like my like farthest trip on a bachelorette, our bachelor weekend, my bachelorette weekend,
You let the hair down that weekend.
Bachelorettes just keep asking me to their parties and they keep giving me singles. Like, who am I to say no, right, Cynthia?
How can you possibly say no? I just don't think you can.
It's a business opportunity. What can I do here?
Nick is the one that comes with the what we'll call fun straws.
Good Lord. All right. Cynthia, how much of a win total difference does it make for the Browns from if Joe Flacco or Kenny Pickett starts week one to if Shedeur Sanders or Dylan Gabriel start week one?
Well, the thing about having rookies, and this is true for any rookie, regardless of, you know, where they were drafted or it's just hard. Your welcome to the NFL moment is never going to be easy for you. There's a ton of stats that show that, you know, rookies have a hard time winning their first games. You know, we could go through all of them if you wanted to, but ultimately, it's not going to be easy for any rookie. So it is harder to have that. And, you know, it's never... Obviously, the Bengals, you know, that's the home opener. The home opener is their defense isn't the strength of their team, but going up against a Joe Burrow led team it's in the division is difficult as well. And then you got the Ravens next, and then the Packers. Like, it's not an easy September for any quarterback for the Browns. So, you know, it does change it in a pretty good amount if a rookie starts or not. But then there's other things that could suggest that later in the season it's better for the rookie to have had experience, especially against defenses that are of the caliber of the Ravens, for example, so that you have the opportunity to learn and grow and kind of get past that rookie base. So it's kind of a trade-off, right? Which one do you decide, you know, what works best and when?
Cynthia, why does it feel like nationally a lot of people believe it'll be Joe Flacco week one, but then locally we're all kind of keened in on the idea that it feels like it'll be Kenny Pickett week one? There's a divide here. I don't know if you feel that same way as well, but it feels you do.
You know why? Because Joe Flacco has been fun for like national media to watch. So and not to be offensive to Kenny Pickett, but he hasn't had that comeback story that Joe Flacco had, right? Like Joe Flacco's just been like a storyline, right? We've talked a lot about him. It's been funny. Like there's been last year, it was like hilarious to watch him on the field, not remembering people's names after games. Like, people are just more used to saying his name than Kenny Pickett's. I don't think it has anything to do with a perception about skill or whatever. I think it has a lot more to do with that we've just been talking a lot more about him in recent years than we have about Kenny Pickett.
Cynthia, one of the main talking points last week for us was that not the strength of schedule doesn't matter to every team equally.
No.
I will ask you, how much will strength of schedule, the Browns thought to have one of the three toughest schedules in the NFL this year, how much will that matter to this Browns team this year?
Well, I mean, it will matter based on how the offense is constructed, meaning is the expectation going into the season that you're next year having a guy who would be perceived as a franchise quarterback, or is it that they're trying to figure some things out and willing to tinker more? It's all about managing expectations. You're just unfortunately in a division where, okay, like how surprised were you that it was one of the hardest schedules? I don't know. When you're in the AFC North, does it ever feel like an easy schedule? Like, no. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's different. Like the entire NFC West this year, for example, they get to play the NFC South and the AFC South. That feels easier, but they still have to play each other. And the NFC West is still pretty difficult as well. So I mean, yes and no, some of it matters. It really matters in your division a lot more often. Like if you're playing a first place versus a fourth place schedule, but I don't know, your division is a nightmare.
Cynthia, what does it look like to you if it's, and you don't have to say whether between Dylan or Shador, just one of the rookie quarterbacks, what do they have to look like from a maybe even a win-loss percentage, but also then a statistical standpoint where you're like, okay, we don't need to go quarterback in 2026 with the two first-round picks we have?
Yeah. I would say to me the metrics would be, can you operate the system? Like, I understand it's been used in the pejorative to call someone a system quarterback in the past, but I actually think, like, until you are of a Tom Brady or a Patrick Mahomes status, you are a system quarterback. You have to learn the system first, then you can become the guy who imparts the system. So when I'm looking at this, Kevin Stefanski is a great coach. Can you run and operate the things and the principles he is trying to teach you? If the answer is yes, then you're in great shape for next season. If the answer is no, then also the Browns as an organization are in great shape with their picks and where they're located in the draft next year. Great. None of these things are, to me, it's all upside, right? The question will really become, does this human, whoever it is, you know, maybe Kenny Pickett has this resurgent year and he can operate the system masterfully. Even that would be like great. If you can get a guy for even, let's say 5 years to operate at a really high level, you'd be really happy.
Cynthia Freeland of the NFL Network on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So I was reading your piece on the NFL on NFL.com about each AFC team's win total projection after the schedule release here. The Browns, for you, you've got the least amount of wins in the AFC, 5.6 wins. So I'm just curious, like, what are the factors that determine for you whether they go over or under that win total?
In August, my number for the Browns will be something I feel stronger about. Right now, there's just so much uncertainty at quarterback, right? And quarterback being such an important position, and how the O-line will help or not help the quarterback. How all of these different, like, what is the expectation? If for some reason in August we hear Dylan Gabriel is a starter, it's just, it's a different metric than if we hear, you know, they're starting with Kenny or Joe. Like, that's going to be different expectations set. Your schedule is a total nightmare, and the beginning of the schedule starting so hard that makes things harder to succeed when, you know, in the areas where maybe there's more manageable games that are stacked in a row, right? Like, you know, I think like by the time you get to November, you'll have the real win for the Browns will be, how does it look against, you know, the Raiders on November 23rd? Like, how does it look against the Titans, a team that's also had a lot of, you know, they'll have a new quarterback and they've got a lot of change and whatever. How does it look against the teams where you have a real chance later in the season? But your schedule's a nightmare, like basically start to finish.
Let me ask you, you mentioned that you think Kevin Stefanski's great, and a lot of people really do like Kevin Stefanski. This isn't on him necessarily, but the question is, like, what part of Stefanski do you love the most when historically you're entering year six, one playoff win, and that entire stretch, most people wouldn't have their job at this point?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, there's a couple of things. Number one, even though he's maybe not the most, like, charismatic interviewer for the media, right? Like, I don't care. Are you teaching people? And if you talk about what people have learned from him and how former players talk about the way that he has, like, ask Kirk Cousins, a guy who is very good at speaking, what he learned from Kevin Stefanski, and you will get an answer that you'll be like, oh, darn, like, that's really, really great. Teaching players how to play football is so hard, especially in the changing landscape of, you know, now these kids making a lot of money coming out of college, that it's just a different sort of level of, you know, teach what they do in college. They were allowed to leave, right? So now what, right? Like, now they're going to act a little differently. But the fact that he does it without, like, you know, being this head coach that, like, Dan Campbell, I'm, you know, he seems pretty fun, but, and he's a really good interview, but is he really teaching the guys what to do? My answer is probably no. Whereas Kevin Stefanski is really teaching the guys what they need to be doing.
Cynthia, Brock Purdy gets a $265 million deal, $55 a year, about $180 million guaranteed. Is this a good decision by the 49ers to give him the bag?
I mean, did they really? Like, I love, listen, let me be clear. I love agents and how they report stuff. Because, like, listen to that spread. 265 or 181. Like, what's the truth? We don't really know, right? Like, the truth is probably closer to the guarantee than the upside, because the agent is incentivized to report this massive number. They didn't have a choice. What are the Niners going to do? Who are the Niners going to go out and get? Kirk Cousins?
Like, could have done that.
Are they going to maybe convince Aaron Rodgers to come there? They were kind of, you know, that was what they had to work with. Now, I will say, I would imagine that deal is pretty cleverly written, because that spread you hear is larger than most spreads you hear about, you know, 265 versus 181. Like, you usually hear something more like, you know, 222 and 190, you know, like, where it's not as big of a spread between the potential bottom and the potential top. So I'm sure there's lots of ways that they've tricked they're a smart organization when it comes to managing how that cap actually manifests against, like, what the IRS thinks they make and what, you know, what it counts for against the very complicated shared revenue system of the NFL.
Will Trey Hendrickson play with the Bengals, or do you think he's going to get traded maybe even to an NFC North team?
I mean, Trey Hendrickson has been unhappy. Now, here's the thing people don't realize. Trey Hendrickson, he wasn't happy signing that COVID deal. Right? Like, he was mad for a couple of years now. We've heard him say things for a couple of years. And usually what happens is they get Lou Anarumo to fly out there and figure out how to make him happy enough to play. Oh, just to be the sack leader. No big deal. Last season on a defense that they've spent no money on. So now you get rid of Lou, who's obviously with the Colts. And I don't think that the new defensive coordinator is treating him in a way that will make him play for less money. So I'm not sure if I think he plays. I actually do think he gets traded, and I don't know to whom, but I think there's a very strong chance that he doesn't play there, because it does not seem like the Bengals are organized enough in a way that rewards the right things at the right time. I mean, the fact that Ja'Marr Chase played without a deal last year, Triple Crown winner Ja'Marr Chase, that's wild. Most other people wouldn't have done that. They really wouldn't have. If it weren't for his, you know, friend Joe Burrow being the quarterback, I don't think he would have, because there's a lot of, he would have held out at least a little bit longer. But I don't think the Bengals are, and I say this, you know, I stand by this, but they have not done a good job of, they're not one of the teams that's a shining example of how to, you know, manage their cap and get the deals done and pay their guys.
Cynthia, last week was the NBA draft lottery, and post that, several NFL reporters or figures, analysts, whatever, speculated the NFL could be interested in a NBA-style draft lottery in the NFL. Do you think it would work, and do you like that idea?
No, I hate that idea. Mostly because I think part of this, we have a lot more, like, the influence, there's such an outsized influence of one game on the NFL when you don't have as many games, each one, the scarcity drives more importance for each game. And when you have 53 people on a roster, then now you have, you know, and 1/17th of your entire season played each weekend, you need to be able to, like, parity is what makes our sport better than all the other ones, in my opinion. You know, the way that you go, you could, every year we have teams go from worst to first in their division. I can't remember the last time it hasn't happened. I'm sure my, like, my research people that do the historical research, they could tell me, but it's been like 30 years, something crazy like that. And that keeps hope alive. And what is more fun on a Sunday than hope? Nothing.
I would say winning. I don't get
Sunday
a lot of that.
Before the games start.
The hope of winning. Yeah, I don't get that
either. That's right.
Cynthia, great stuff. Glad you had a great weekend. And sounds like you got some great friends here. And we appreciate you making some time for us.
At any time. You know I love you guys. And I hope you have a great summer. And we'll talk to you when it's, you know, when we have like some, the grass smells coming back. The leaves are starting to turn. It'll be great.
Oh, but the weather just got nice here, so you kind of just maybe
didn't. Enjoy the summer first.
Okay.
I do love that early fall. The best time of the year is early fall in the Midwest. Ooh, nothing better.
Cynthia, you're the...
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The best. Thank you so much. Even if three of the four teams in this division stink this year or are average at best, I still think it's a murderer's row considering the teams you end up actually do playing.
Yeah, there's the inverse of that, obviously, too. I mean, maybe the Steelers with Aaron Rodgers are the team that you think they will be, and then the Bengals with Joe Burrow still the Bengals with Joe Burrow. Who's your comeback down team with that? Is that the idea that the Bengals defense is so bad?
I could see Cincinnati still being a 500 team, but I think until Aaron Rodgers signs, I think that could be a team that finally gets below the Mendoza line as well.
That's been the hot take for a while now, it feels like. And I feel like more and more people are believing that's going to be the reality this year.
So great stuff with Cynthia there. We do have Spencer Davies coming up in about 15 minutes. And I will probably call him Spencer German at least once, okay, if I haven't already today. Because there are two Spencers near and dear to my heart. And also my brain links people with the same name and similar last names very close to each other. But you and I are both love sports what ifs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so we are unabashed, unafraid to do those kind of things and unabashed of our love of those things. Well, Seth Wickersham is making his rounds. His book didn't even come out till September. We've already gotten...
Yeah, he might have peaked too early.
The Caleb Williams stuff, fair point. Pre-orders. People can pre-order it.
Yeah, I would never pre-order something 5 months in advance, 4 months in advance. That's just me, though. I don't know. Maybe some other people will. Like, if you know you're going to buy it. But this isn't like Frozen 3 coming out. I know I'm seeing that. This is a Seth Wickersham book.
I mean, I've often said Seth Wickersham books and Frozen 3.
We just watched a documentary on Frozen 2 being made. It's longer than the actual Frozen 2 movie. Yeah, it was like 6 episodes.
Which,
pretty good.
Which, by the way, I think Frozen 2 is just, remember how much you like Frozen 1? This isn't as good.
Second highest as far as box office earnings for that category in worldwide ever. I mean,
I'm a Frozen 1 truther. That's all I am.
I know that about you.
The people have been saying it for a while. So Seth Wickersham was on Up and Adams today talking about Bo Nix and how that might have led Sean Payton. How basically Bo Nix and Pat Mahomes are connected in Sean Payton's brain.
Losing out on Patrick Mahomes was something that haunted Sean Payton. That has haunted Sean Payton's career, that he had his eye on Mahomes and that the Chiefs traded up right before he was due to pick him and got him. The scars from that led to him creating a system to evaluate quarterbacks that led to Bo Nix.
Okay, go ahead. You had something there?
No, I think that's fair. I would also lose sleep over the idea that Andy Reid has now become what might be the best head coach of all time, surpassing Bill Belichick when it's all said and done. And Sean Payton is the guy that was on Fox for a little bit and is now the Broncos head coach.
I just love that the Browns had two top 12 picks in that draft, and they're not even the second best what if with Pat Mahomes. Like, you, there's a world.
But it's because Myles Garrett was as great as he was.
Well, but you could have traded up from 12.
For sure.
I remember that there were some rumors about what they were and weren't willing to give up. I don't remember them exactly. If you do, you can speak to them specifically. I want to say it actually had more to do with future twos than it did a future one, but I could be wrong. Also, Hugh Jackson was your head coach. I think it's fair, though. Like, the what if here is, are the Saints the Chiefs if they take Mahomes?
Yeah, Sean Payton has only done great things with quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not, we can't play with the same thought process of, like, well, you gave him the keys to the Ferrari and he would have bungled it. We have no evidence to suggest that he would have. Like, he had Drew Brees for so many years, won a Super Bowl with him, and now he's got Bo Nix off to a good start in Denver. But the part I can't escape, Nick, is the idea that it's not like the Saints were bad in the years that followed up with that draft. They won double-digit games every single year. They had top-five offenses every single year, right up until the part where Drew Brees stepped away when his arm started to look like he was one half of the Golden Girls.
So the Saints had gone 7-9 three straight years, and the last year of that was 2016.
Right.
So they had spent the three previous years basically refilling the coffers of talent that had kind of eroded after the 2010-2009 win for them. And I actually think Mahomes might have one more Super Bowl. He'd be playing in the NFC South. Like, his path to a championship in the NFC was old Aaron Rodgers, not the same Aaron Rodgers, and Dak. Like, back half of the Seattle dynasty, which was just Russ being pretty good but not great.
He definitely would have had an easier path to the Super Bowl. No one can debate that, because the NFC has been much easier than the AFC, although his Super Bowl opponents would have been very different. The one that stood out was the Tom Brady one, uh-huh. And then obviously you just had the Eagles one. I don't know that the Eagles are any better than what, I don't know. I thought the Bills were a really good team last year. But, like, the Tom Brady one was obviously tough, and then he won the two that he won. You would have had a harder team in going up against an AFC squad.
It also has, well, so that's fair, but I think once you get to the dance, you put Mahomes in that. I guess my thing is, then what happens, because Brees isn't there beyond 2017. Even if he plays in 2017, he's not there in 2018.
Yeah, no, Brees would have done, but he would have gone to another team, though, because even though he was 38 years old at that point in 2017, yeah, he wanted to play until he was 40. He did play until he was 40. He led the league in completion percentage in 2018. Like, he was still swinging it in many ways. I don't know that they would have given up on Drew Brees as quick as maybe you and I would have.
So they go the Aaron Rodgers route?
It might have been a 2 or 3 year deal with him, because Drew Brees was still, again, he led the league in completion percentage, 72%. He was still had an incredible high touchdown interception ratio, fewer than 10 interceptions in the 2018 season. Like, he was going. Still,
I think
Michael Thomas was a star at that point.
I think Peyton has his cake and eat it too moment. I think he gets to have Drew for 2017. Then he's still playing at a high level, coming off a playoff appearance. I think you trade Drew for more picks, and then you have the young quarterback on a rookie deal.
I would have had to know how obvious would have been in practice that Mahomes was that great.
I mean, if you believe any of the reports coming out of Kansas City, It was night and day between Mahomes and Alex Smith, who at that point was
Would it have been night and day between Mahomes and Drew Brees? I imagine we would have gotten there, but remember, it came from the Big 12. It came from a conference that historically we just laughed at. Well, anytime anyone was like, oh yeah, this is going to translate and be great.
I think arm talent alone. I think if Peyton really loves him that much, listen, that, and Andy Reid's very similar. I mean,
there is a reason why he fell to being picked where he was.
The 10th?
I think it was 10 or 11, somewhere there. Yeah.
10. Oh, that's right. It wasn't 8th or 9th, because then the Saints, I think, took Marshawn Lattimore 10th.
It was definitely double digits.
Saints were 11, and Chiefs straight up to 10.
Son of a gun. I was so close. 216-474-0092. I just love the idea, like, you and I both love what-ifs. The idea of Sean Payton drafting Patrick Mahomes. We are having
I'm going the other direction. I think there's a real-world chance, because you would have had to abandon a top five offense. Every single scoring year from 2017 on, they were top five.
I think Sean Payton would have thrown Drew Brees over the side of that boat as quickly as possible. He would have moved him off the luggage quicker than Rose moved off Jack on the Titanic.
I love to believe that you're right there, but that's a big move off of right there. Franchise player, a guy that is the most remembered in your team history at that point, and you're just shipping him off for a chance of what could potentially be something. I don't know that it's that easy. I think it would have been probably a three-year deal like what happened with the Packers, and then you would have kicked him off, and who knows who Mahomes is at that point.
Spencer Davies of Sports Illustrated joins us to talk about Kobe Altman's big press conference in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, we got to run a business and we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because I think most of us, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colone for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.